just by the nature of what we do and how our pastor leads our church, we're heavily volunteer-led. And so the world we live in is recruiting and training volunteers. So this is just stuff that I've learned over the last 6 years where I am. And at any point in time, feel free, guys, to say, hey, got a question? Can you explain it? Let's talk about it. And I seriously want to be on your schedule, all right? So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray for us, and I pray this will be a sharpening time for all of us, and then we'll jump into it. God, thank you for today. And God, I thank you for the leaders that are in this room. And Father, I pray in Jesus' name that the next hour or so would be a time that we grow as leaders. Father, I pray that you'd give us insight by the Holy Spirit of the living God into our ministries and how to lead them better. In Jesus' name, amen. Real quick, who is currently engaged in ministry? How many of you guys are, okay, currently engaged in student ministry, pastor? Rest of us are engaged in student ministry? Okay, very good, very good. All right, so let's just jump right into it. You got a handout. If you don't have a handout, there's one right up here up front. You need one? Let me grab you one, bro. Let's just jump right into it. Right at the top, I just ask a question, okay? And I want to get the wheels turning. I want you guys to begin to think about this idea of recruiting and training leaders as a system, as a process. And so let's just agree or disagree on this first statement. Your system, and whatever your system currently is, and you may say, Matt, I don't have a system, and that's okay too. Your non-system is also a system. But your system is perfectly designed to get the results you are getting. Do you agree or disagree with that statement? Okay? That's simply a thought from the business world that I just pulled out, but I think it applies to the church world as well. So here's the bad news. If you're getting the results that you're looking for, let's just think about the system you currently have for recruiting or training volunteers. You say, Matt, I don't have a system. That's okay. Your non-system is a system as well. But if your system is currently getting the results that you're looking for, not getting the results you're looking for, yet you've been working it hard, okay? So let's just suppose. Let's say I have my system for recruiting volunteers, training volunteers, and it runs the whole gamut. If it's not getting what you want, you don't have enough volunteers. The volunteers aren't getting trained. They're not effectively doing what it is that you, what the purpose is for your student ministry. If it's not doing that, then here's the bad news. Does that mean that your system is flawed? Here's the good news, okay? Once you accept the premise that my system is perfectly designed to get the results that I'm getting, that means we can start looking for ways to change our design to significantly improve our results. So here's what I want you to do. Just for about 2 minutes in the space on your sheet, what I would like for you guys to do is just real briefly jot down what your system is, how you would identify it. I don't know how you would identify it, how you'd write it, what the terms you would use. But your system for recruiting and training volunteers from the very beginning to the very end. In the very beginning, and we'll talk all the way through this whole cycle here, and you see some words that I have on the board here. But just take 2 minutes and jot down your system for recruiting and training volunteers, okay? Get the wheel spinning, and we'll come back in just about 2 minutes. Take about 30 more seconds. All right, real briefly, just to the right on your sheet of paper there, you see that box there. Just a practical thought for me. Every time I go to a conference, I try to take away at least one or two things. If there's something that spurs your mind, even if we're four pages in and you think, man, I need to take this home, feel free to flip back over and write it in that box, all right? A couple quick thoughts. Let's get us going. Let's get the train moving here as we think about this process of recruiting and training volunteers. And the first thought is this: the average turnover of volunteers is about 30% every year. That means if you've got 10 volunteers in your ministry, all of us are good mathematicians, three of them are probably going to rotate out of your ministry every year. And for whatever reason, their kids drop, you know, kids are graduate from your ministry, they're just beat down, they're tired, whatever it may be, 30% is typically your turnover every year. Number two, we look for people who are committed, not necessarily competent. And that may, you may initially think, wait a minute, I want somebody who's competent to lead my students, who can teach great Bible study, who's great at relationships. And I'll explain this here in just a second, this thought. But we look for people who are committed, not necessarily competent. Here's the reason why. Because we recruit people to a team, not to a ministry. And that's essential, especially in the world of student ministry. Longevity is so critical, and you hear these thoughts quite often. But we recruit people to a team, and because we recruit people to a team, if you've ever played on a team, if you've ever been involved in a sport, you know that part of being on a team is that the job of a coach, and by the way, we're the coach in this process here, is to develop that team. And we're going to talk about that here in just a bit, okay? And in conferences that we do often, when we ask youth pastors what it is that you need, what can we help you with, what are your top three things that you're like, man, I'm struggling with, can you help? Typically, the top two things we hear are, number one, I need to figure out how to train my leaders. And then number two, it always has to do something with student leaders as well. So, and then the last thought here is just a verse, Luke 10:2, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And if you're in youth ministry and you're responsible for recruiting and training volunteers, you say amen. You know that's to be the case, okay? All right, so let's just jump right into it. What should a volunteer recruiting training system look like? I've used the visual illustration of something like a wheel here. And I use one noun, but I use three different adjectives to describe this whole process, okay? So the noun is momentum, and momentum is such a huge thing in ministry, regardless of whether you're creating a system for recruiting volunteers or whether you're mobilizing kids for evangelism, or whatever it may be, campus, whatever it is, momentum is a huge thing. So the noun is momentum, but here are the three adjectives: create, capture, sustain, okay? So let's just walk through this first idea of creating momentum. When I say create momentum in this process, here's what I want you to think of initially. I want you to think initially of recruiting and exposure. This is the very front end of this process of developing a system for recruiting and training volunteers. So when we talk about creating momentum, I don't know what your situation is in your church. I don't know how many volunteers you have. I don't know how many volunteers you need. But I know in my situation, this process on the very front end of recruiting volunteers, I often need a strategy to create momentum and excitement and want and will to be in my ministry. Anybody identify with that? Anybody got parents who are deadbeats or whatever it may be that don't volunteer? Anybody in that situation? I have interns that stay with us for a year to 2 years, and we launch them out. And I've got one particular intern, and he calls me quite often. And he says, man, I can't get anybody to volunteer in my ministry. I got parents that are there, but they won't serve. They won't get engaged. And most of us can identify with that, right? Most of us can identify with it. So as we think through this process of recruiting and training volunteers, the first thought is creating momentum. How do we create that momentum to capture attention, to get someone thinking about the possibility of joining us on our team? Okay, so let's walk through this first idea of creating momentum, okay? The key word is exposure. We're thinking recruiting. Let's hit the recruiting trail. There are three basic sales methods that we use in recruiting, okay? And your volunteer needs, whatever they may be, whether it's a small group leader or Wednesday night leader or whatever it may be, your volunteer needs will almost always be communicated in one of these three ways. Number one will be communicated by need. The thought there comes from Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30. And we could probably all identify with this. The Lord said, I searched for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land so that I would not destroy it, but I found no one. You ever you ever been in that place where you're like, man, I got a need, but there's no one to fill it? So whenever we communicate our open positions or whatever it is, our volunteer positions, often we recruit based on need. And it sounds something like this. Hey, hey guys, parents, whether it's an email, Twitter, letter, whatever it may be, hey parents, look, we've got 6 open small group classes that need a volunteer, and unless you guys get over here and volunteer, oh, by the way, we just got to shut this place down, right? So we capture that idea by saying we have a need here that we need you to fulfill. Number two sales method in this recruiting process is we recruit based on duty. That says 1 Timothy. It actually should be 2 Timothy there in the notes. But we recruit based on duty. It sounds something like this. Hey, if you're a Christian sitting out there in the pews, this may be your pastor making an announcement from the stage. Hey, if you're out there in the pews today, I want you to understand, it's your duty as a Christian. You need to get in and serve, right? Okay, so that's the second sales method we typically employ. Here's the third one. We recruit based on vision. We recruit based on vision. Luke chapter 5, verse 1 through 11, you know the story there. Peter has been fishing all night. They've come to the shore, and you know the story. They haven't caught anything, right? You know the story? And Jesus says, hey, put out in the deep water, let your nets down for a catch. And then Peter says, look, man, we've worked all night. We haven't caught anything. But look, if you tell me to do it, I'll do it. And so they did as the Lord said. And remember what happened? Remember what happened there? The nets were so full that it says, the scripture says, they began to burst, okay? And so we walk through this process, and then Peter falls down at the feet of Jesus after he sees all of this happen. And then I think the critical verses here are verse 10. It says, and Jesus said to Simon, do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men. When they had brought their boats to the land, they left everything and they followed him. Here's what I think is pretty awesome about this. Peter has been engaged in whatever his job was there. And Jesus gives him a vision for what his life could be. Okay? Let's pull that back as it relates to student ministry and recruiting volunteers. I stand up on a Sunday morning, on a parent Sunday, and the room is full of parents every August. And I stand up on the stage and I say, hey, good morning, parents. Glad you guys are here. Man, really, really thankful that you thought enough to be here this morning and grab some information about our ministry and what's going on. Before we jump into it, I want to bring Austin up to the stage. Austin, come on up here. I put my arm around Austin. I say, hey, parents, this is Austin. I don't know if any of you guys know Austin. Austin is a senior at Woodstock High School. And about 6 months ago, Austin came to our ministry, had some students that were around him. And they were just from all different sides. The gospel was being poured into his life, and he gave his life to Christ. And Austin's a senior at Woodstock. He's already started school this semester. He's on campus. And the gospel has so captured his heart. It's been really neat to see. He's gone back to his school campus, and he started a Bible study at lunch, 12 o'clock on Fridays. And the Bible study has grown to 60 students every single Friday. Man, it's so cool, isn't it? At that point, parents cheer. Woo! I mean, it's awesome. Parents love to hear what God is doing. And so at that point, we say, man, isn't it so cool to see what God's doing in Austin's life? That's awesome. But, you know, here's the neat thing. Austin has plugged into a small group in the last 6 months, and we've got a couple adult leaders that have been pouring into his life and just speaking the gospel into his life, and it's been so neat to watch these leaders have the opportunity to invest in Austin's life. And here's what we need, parents. I know you showed up this morning thinking you were just going to get some information, but we need some other parents and adult leaders who will invest into the lives of students just like Austin, who can change their campus and change their world. I want to invite you guys to join us here. I mean, we've got needs, and there's a lot of things going on, but I want you to understand God's doing some really cool things, and I want you to invite you to be a part of what God's doing. See, that's a lot more appealing, right, than saying, hey, I got a need. We got 17 classes that are open. If you don't volunteer, we're going to have to shut the whole thing down, or it's your duty to serve. Vision is the most appealing method and the most effective method for communicating your needs. So we'll massage this out and figure out how we can communicate that vision here in just a second, okay? Now, let's talk back. Let's talk in circles here for just a second. Let's talk about your system and your strategies for recruiting new leaders. I want you guys to talk together, and then we'll talk through some proven recruiting strategies here for just a second, okay? What do you do? What do you do? And you may not think of it as a system. You may think of it as a process. You may think of it as, hey, I write a letter every May and ask parents to serve. I ask my pastor to stand up and make an announcement. I put an announcement in the bulletin. What's your process? What are your strategies for recruiting new leaders?
I'll anybody, because I mean, I'm kind of looking, of course, I've got students in there, so I'm going to look at their parents and these things. I'm looking at the pool I have and trying to find out, is there consistency in their life? Have they been around? Then typically, you know, maybe I would approach them, you know, personally is what I usually do, talk to them, the need, and here we go. So a lot of times that's how, right now, how, you know, I do it outside of like a meeting, like you're saying, I usually kind of start with that and get go from there.
Let's pause just for a second here, and Jason's already answered a $60,000 question, so we might as well fill in the blank here. The bottom line is this: your number one recruiting strategy is always relationships. Is always relationships. Let me just tell you my experience. Hey, Pastor, would you mind just announcing this, you know, this week that I need some leaders? Hey, if you're interested in serving in high school ministry, man, here's Matt's email address. Never happens. We're a big church. He's not just going to say that for high school. But we typically sometimes will ask pastor to do that for our ed staff and that sort of thing. So he'll send up and make an announcement. Let me tell you who shows up at my door. Weirdos. They're weirdos. And not typically somebody who's going to be a committed volunteer. But Jason hit the nail on the head here. Your number one recruiting strategy is always relationships. And I like what you said there. You said, I use my current volunteers to say, who do you know? So here's the second part of that. Your personal relationships are limited. So you must always look for ways to expand your sphere of influence. I think that for us, that is the number one recruiting strategy for us, Jason. I tell my adult leaders every year around April, hey guys, we're getting to the time we're going to transition. I know some of you guys are going to transition out. Those of you who are sticking around, or even those who you may be leaving for whatever reason, I want to ask you guys to go out and find someone, share what God's doing here, and find someone who can join our team. Most effective strategy we have. In fact, a lot of our classes that start out the year or start out the summer with only one teacher, I'll tell them, hey, who do you know that can... And I think of Rob Long immediately. This semester, he started out with a brand new slate. It was just him by himself. We launched out as co-teacher last year to another class. And he said, man, I need a co-teacher. I said, here's what I want you to do. Think about somebody in your life that can do it. So he has two guys that he's been mentoring that are younger guys in their 20s, and they're current leaders. And it came because he was our best recruiting strategy. You were going to ask a question. Well, here's the thought process for me. I know our church, and I know our ed staff. And most of the guys on our ed staff will start recruiting somewhere around May. Yes, I want to get the word out before they do. So I know that's going to be put on the website. They'll probably hear it. But well, I'll tell you. Just jumping ahead just a little bit when we talk about capturing momentum and what happens with next steps and new leader training. I had a guy this year his name is Johnny Gunter, and by the way, he's turned out to be a fantastic volunteer already. And he said, I know that I'm transitioning out of adult ministry, want to come to student ministry, and he approached me in April about it. So I said, Johnny, here's what I want you to do. He said, my last day is in May. I said, from May until we launch the first Sunday in August, I want you to sit in various classes. I've got a process for how I go about new leaders. I sit down with them for 2 weeks. I let them observe for 2 weeks. I sit down with them the third week. We go over the covenant. We go over my new leader book. And then if it's that close to August, I'll go ahead and launch them out. But I typically like to get them earlier, so I let them observe a lot. So he observed for 2 months in various classes, and I put him in classes that are doing really, really well. And I just let him observe and see what's going on. So if I get leaders that early in the process, and that's not typical, that's atypical, because a lot of the leaders we get are coming from other places or moving up from middle school. They're coming from adult world. But if it's a new volunteer, I always let them observe for a couple months before we, if I don't have a spot for them right away. Does that make sense? So I just try to get ahead of the game before everybody else does. That's for me. But what else? What else is working for you guys as far as creating momentum, thinking about exposure to your opportunities? What's working?
What I do is, it goes back, it's a secular book that I read, but
That's good.
You don't want to teach them.
That's great.
And so after we do that, I pray some more, and then I look for those. I look at those people that have our core values and have a passion for that area of ministry.
That's good.
And then I pray some more, and then I approach them. It's been really effective.
That's very good.
People on the bus before we decide where we're going.
That's good. That's good. I know how this process works, and I know there's been years where I've said, if he's breathing, he can get in a class for me. But there's also been years when, and it got me in trouble a couple years ago because I had some classes with leaders in it that really didn't, I probably shouldn't have placed them in a lead role, and it got me in trouble. But there have been years where I've sat down with people and I haven't brought them on our team, or if I have brought them on our team, I put them in a very secondary role where they're not responsible. And not only that, but there's a whole nother teaching session here talking about employing people in their gifting. We've recently moved to our small group platform where our leaders are typically gifted in one of a couple areas: teaching, which is typically the team leader for our classes, relationships, or administration. Administration is for that parent that wants to be with students but doesn't want to teach students or doesn't want to have a lot of responsibility outside of the class. Relationships is typically a younger leader, and the teacher is typically a veteran who's got the gift of teaching, we know can communicate well on Sunday mornings in a small group. But that's a whole nother teaching session as well. Anything else that's working well? I think that's fantastic. It's a covenant from everybody. Everybody who's a small group leader on Sunday morning and Wednesday night signs the same covenant from preschool all the way through senior adults. It's the same one. Now, the application is sometimes different for me in those specific covenants. And that covenant may actually be on my blog somewhere. I'm not sure. It may actually be. No, it's not in the notes. I think it's on my blog if you want to pick that up, though. Yeah, it's there. Anything else that's working well for you guys in creating exposure? And I've listed some recruiting strategies here in that box for you guys, and I've even listed what it works well with if your strategy is need, duty, vision, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that for my younger leaders, social media has worked really well. I do know email, not always. Letter, I don't typically send out a letter, but I did send one out a couple years ago, and it went along with the first strategy, which was need, but it also communicated vision. And it wasn't a harsh letter, but it was a letter to say, guys, here's the deal. Our ministry has grown. We have students that are ready and eager to study the Word of God. They show up every Sunday morning. We got classrooms that are exploding in here, but we don't have leaders to invest into their life. And so in that letter to parents, I said to them, guys, if we don't have adults that will step up and invest into the lives of our leaders, you're essentially telling those new students who are walking into our ministry, you can go to hell because we don't care about you. And those are exact words that I use. And so I got a lot of leaders out of that letter. I got a lot of leaders that picked up the phone and said, wow, I was convicted by that. Somebody needed to tell me the severity of how we need leaders in our ministry. So sometimes that's appropriate. I sent a letter this year to every 20 to 26-year-old in our church because I needed some relational leaders. And so we got a few out of that as well. Letters, pastor announcement, hardly ever do we use that. Current teacher recruitment is by far our best deal. Volunteer interest day. I do have some buddies that do observation days and observation nights, depending on what you're recruiting for, if it's a small group or a large group gathering. And I've actually sat in on a couple of those observation nights where they take you through. And we follow the same pattern on Wednesday night where a new leader is interested. We'll let them observe everything that goes on a Wednesday night and then pull them back after they give us their commitment. Anything else that's working for you guys as far as recruiting that's creating interest that may be over the top? There's a thousand different things here. But as you're developing your process and you know your situation the best, just think in this system, on the front end of the system, what you're trying to do is create momentum. You're trying to capture exposure from those who could possibly be your leaders. Any thoughts on this?
One of the things when I stepped into my ministry position, there were probably more leaders than they are now. But I felt like we had a lot of weak spots, not a lot of very strong spiritual people at all. And I was like in panic mode. So I went and found the deacons. all right, which deacons have students in student ministry?
And that's good.
And I called.
That's a great idea.
And so I went to those. Our deacons in our church are very much service related. We have a good deacon body. Well, they stepped into those roles and they rocked them out.
That's awesome.
However, let me say that I quickly found out that I needed to pair them up with somebody, one of the other leaders that I had that maybe wasn't spiritually where they were at, but had time.
Yeah.
Because most of those deacons did not have.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know, and I probably didn't find that out, figure that out soon enough.
Yeah. I think that goes along with what you said earlier, not only getting people on the right people on the bus, but the right seat on the bus. Yeah. And you know, here's one of the things we do with that, with pairing people up. If I have a current existing leader who's been teaching for a while, she knows her personality. She knows what works best with her, or he knows his personality. So I'll say, I've got a potential leader. I'm going to sit them in with you during this observation process. Your goal is to figure out if this person could be a good fit. If not, I'm going to move them on the next week and let them sit in with someone else and that sort of thing. I think that's very critical in team dynamics. Even when I was a leader at discipleship leader at that church in Raleigh when I was at Southeastern, I was paired up with a couple guys that, man, I just didn't mesh well with, but I know why we were together because they were like, okay, desperate, let's put these two guys together. You know, and so it wasn't very well thought out, if that makes sense. So I appreciate what you said there. That's great wisdom. Any other thoughts about this part of the process? If not, let's move on to the second part of this wheel here. And again, momentum is the noun, but the adjective changes. And the adjective for the second part of this wheel is capture. And so after we've recruited, after we have made our need known, and we have commitments from leaders, this part of the wheel, I want you to think about next steps or new leader training. Okay? Next steps and new leader training. I'm extremely surprised whenever I talk with youth pastors who have no next steps for after what happens when they recruit a new leader. So, two basic mistakes in capturing momentum and training new leaders. Number one, attempt too little. Attempt too little. Hey, Johnny, can you teach? Great, dude. Here's the curriculum, man. We'll see you in May. Attempting too little. And then number two, you probably guess it, attempting too much. We do have to remember that we do operate in real life and people have kids and jobs and everything else. And so our tendency is to say, this is the most important thing. And oh, by the way, I agree with that statement. But we do operate in a world where maybe our leaders don't think it's the most important thing, but also their time is limited. Okay? This part of the process here, the second part of this wheel, this is the introduction of your team and your process of training. This is the introduction of your team and your process of training. Okay? Three things new volunteers should never have to guess about. Three things new volunteers should never have to guess about. Number one, your purpose. Number one, your purpose. They need to know, what are you trying to accomplish through them being employed in your ministry? If they think the only thing they're responsible for doing is teaching, yet you say, I want you to do relationships well and I want you to reach kids in the community, then they're going to miss out on 66% of what your strategy is, what your purpose is for their particular volunteer role. Our purpose for our small group leaders on Sunday morning is to reach students, to teach students, and to do relationships really, really well. Reach students, teach students, do relationships really, really well. That may not be the purpose for your small group or whatever your specific role is for Wednesday night. Now, I have volunteers that come in on Wednesday night and they fill very different roles than a small group leader would. I've got two guys that come in every Wednesday night at 5:30 and each of them gets a stamp. One gets a blue stamp, one gets a red stamp. And those two guys know your job is number one, to get a stamp on a hand. A kid that's been here and goes here consistently gets a blue stamp. A kid that has never been here before gets a red stamp. And we have a thing that we do, a VIP after party and that sort of thing. But they also know the second part of their job is they have a phrase that they say, and it is, glad you are here. Okay? And the third part of it is they should smile, speak, and touch appropriately, pat on the back, high five, for every student that comes through our door. So knowing what the purpose is for their responsibility is critical. Second thing your volunteers should never have to guess about, your process. Your process. And I think it's good, even though a volunteer may fill one very specific role in your ministry, I think it's good for them to understand the overall process of your ministry, what the purpose of Sunday morning is, what the purpose of Wednesday night is, your discipleship process, general student ministry. Not only that, but not only just the big picture, but the process of little things like, hey, I want to take my kids on a paintball outing. What do I do? Well, the process is you call Cindy. You have to have signed permission forms. And if you need a van, we book it for you. So I'm talking about other process. Process is like what happens on Sunday morning whenever you come into the small group space. What do you do first? Do you go and get your book? Do you hang out? What's the process? What does it look like? What is the process in your small group? What's the most effective use of your one-hour? There's a lot of things here. That's why the next part of this system is vital, okay? Number three, they should never have to guess about your expectations. They should never have to guess about your expectations. And I mean expectations in their small group, expectations out of their small group, your policies, whatever those may be. I had a very difficult situation this week where I had to release an employee on my staff. And I had to do some things I didn't want to do. And part of that was he didn't fully understand all the expectations, but once he did, he still continued to operate in a way that was inconsistent with our staff. But expectations for him on the front end may have helped him. So expectations, they should never have to guess about your expectations for them. Okay, now let's discuss this thought. How does your system facilitate the next steps for your new volunteers? What happens after they sign on the dotted line? What happens? Do you give them a DVD and say, I need you to watch this before you teach? Do you meet with them personally? Do you give them a handbook? What's the next step after you've gotten their yes on the table? Any thoughts? What's that? Yeah. That's good.
Seeing if what their thoughts, they might not think it's something they'd be a part of. Maybe it's a different area.
That's good.
Night or something. So, I guess that's a part of describing the whole ministry. There's other areas that we have need. If you feel like that,
yeah.
The Lord's not leading you in this small group, Wednesday night breakout group, something like that.
That's fantastic. So, yeah, that's excellent. I would like to suggest to you guys, and I think this one very simple thing can alleviate a lot of issues months down the road or even weeks down the road and possibly even years down the road, and that's this. I think every new leader that comes in our ministry, we should sit down across the table with and look eyeball to eyeball and walk through our ministry with them. And that may look very different for different volunteer positions that you have. My small group leaders have a much more rigorous process than my hand stampers on Wednesday night. But my small group leaders don't sit in a small group and lead my students until they sit at the cafe with me on a Sunday morning and I walk through an adult leader handbook with them. And I walk through all 11 things in the covenant with them until I say, I expect you to read this. Now, some of this is changing for us, and I'll tell you what we're going to do different. But they don't get the seal of approval from me until they have a personal interview. I know some guys are a lot more stringent about this interview than I am. But regardless, I think you need to look some guys in the eyes and some ladies in the eyes and say, here is what we're trying to accomplish and here's how you fit in that role. And I allow them to speak into the process too. I'll lay out the curriculum map. I'll lay out our positions that we have open. And I'll say, now that you know what we're trying to do around here, where is it that you feel like you fit in? I mean, do you want to be a teacher? I mean, is that your gifting? Have you taken a spiritual gifts test? Is that your gifting? Are you more relational? And a lot of times I know that before I ever go into the interview. Or are you administration? You say, I don't really want an upfront role in my small group. I just want to take role. I want to be the person responsible for sending emails or Facebook or text messages during the week. I want to plan the outside of small group activities that we do, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that we're about to do differently, I say we're about to. I have a lot of we're about to's, but I hope this will come to fruition. But one of the things we're hoping to do is, and this is easy. I don't know if you guys have a flip camera. If you're in student ministry, you should have some sort of ability to record a video, and it makes it easy, even on your iPad if that's what you do. But I'm about to record a series of videos for our new leaders. So the ones on Wednesday night will come in, and they'll watch a DVD for about an hour during our epicenter. Our small group leaders will have a little more rigorous process where they'll go through some basics on reaching, teaching, and relationships, as well as one on overall big picture of our ministry. And they'll be required to watch those before I ever plug them into a small group. And I don't want to be legalistic about it, but I'm going to have them sign off that they have read it. And I may just have a one-page fill-in-the-blank where they fill in the blanks and return that back to me. But I think the idea of being a little more stringent on the front end is much better than saying, hey, door's open, man, come on in, right? I wish I could have gone back 6 years, and I wish I could have been a little more stringent about who I let in. Because here's what I think happens. Whenever you're stringent and you're selective, I think it communicates to the rest of the church body, it's a privilege to serve in that student ministry, you know? Or they just let anybody in, or it's chaos over there because their adult leaders don't have control. But when I'm stringent and selective, it communicates, man, it's a real privilege to serve over there. I want it. It almost creates an I want to be a part of it process. Okay, there's some things here. New leader training, I introduce them to the leader maturation expectations. I expect them to have skills in the area of reaching students, teaching students, relating with students. And then when I come all the way across that wheel of my maturation cycle, I say, in some point in this process, if you stick with us long enough, I expect you to reproduce yourself. Meaning I'll put a younger leader with you for a year as your co-teacher or your relational leader or your administrative person with your goal to launch them out. You're my hands-on leader for a year. And then there's some other stuff there if you got any questions about it. I know guys that do a new leader boot camp for a day. They give a book to summarize what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. Any thoughts on that before we move on to the last part? I don't know. Jason could tell you. STRINGENT. There you go. Sure.
You know, in terms of like just how biblically, literate.
We have a doctrinal statement that they sign. It's pretty basic, but I have eliminated volunteers in the past. I've eliminated one guy specifically based on his responses to it, and I sat down and I said, "Dude, I can't put you in front of kids to teach if you don't understand the doctrine of salvation." And I said, "I'm not. That doesn't mean I'm giving up on you. That means I'll pair you up with one of my veteran leaders." And I'm going to require you to read some books. And at the end of that process, we'll come back. And he said, that's not for me. So there's a doctrinal statement that, I mean, you know, again, some guys may be more stringent and say, hey, I want to know, what are you reading in your quiet time on that personal interview? And I don't ask that, but I do ask, man, tell me where you are spiritually. How are you doing? Are you growing?
Good. That's great. Gospel, I don't want you teaching.
That's good.
But it's okay if you're going to be greedy.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That's a great thought. You know, just some basics of the whole process. I think there really should be an application, and it could be longer. Ours is probably 10 pages total, because there's a doctrinal statement that's a couple pages. There's a covenant page, and then there's a tell me about yourself, tell me your testimony, and that sort of thing. And then there's a background check. And none of us in this room should be employing adult leaders without a background check, and I'm sure you guys are. But that's the basics of my application, but I think all of us should be. Any other question on that? That's a great question. Yep, I'm almost positive it's on my blog there. In fact, I think I could be wrong, but I think the handbook is on the blog there too as well. I could be wrong about that, but most of that stuff is on there. It's a Word document for most of it. You can just download it. Any questions, thoughts, discussion? Last part of the process here, after we have created momentum, captured momentum with those new leaders. And the last part of this process is sustaining momentum. Okay, remember when we said at the beginning of this process, 30% will walk out of your doors every year. That's been my experience, typically, over the last 6 years. 30% will walk out, and they'll walk out for various reasons. They don't feel equipped. They don't feel appreciated. They're just tired. Their students walk out of your ministry. I try not to take it personally, but a lot of times I do. But the thing that I want to be conscious of is, am I constantly appreciating? Am I constantly training and helping my leaders feel like they're equipped to do what they need to do? Okay, so that's the last part of this process. This is after they've joined your team. You've gone through, hey, some expectations, my purpose, my process. The last part is ongoing training and ownership opportunities. Ongoing training and ownership opportunities. But not only that, you said earlier, getting the right people on the bus, but part of this process for me is getting the right people in the right seat on the bus. And I'll tell you about that here in just a second. And what I say about that is veteran leader involvement. And there's several ways that we do that. Creating a system of ongoing training and ownership opportunities. And this is the part where we hear from most youth pastors about, where they're like, man, I just need some help. Four areas every leader needs to be trained. Four areas every leader needs to be trained. Number one, your process. We talked about that before. Process, how do we do things? And some of this is not necessarily, here's our leadership meeting, here's how you fill out your role. Some of that stuff is easy. You put it in an adult leader handbook and say, read over it. You don't have to train somebody on something like that. But number one, process. Number two, purpose, why we do things. Number three, proficiency, how do you do your job better? That's typically the meat of our leader trainings. How do you do your job better? We're teaching them strategies for teaching, strategies for reaching, how to prepare a lesson, how to be creative, how to develop a system of contact so it can save you time. How do you do your job better? Number four, and then just personal. Leadership of self is so critical, especially as a student pastor. But it's also critical to your own leaders, because as we're a student ministry, we know this thought. Students are attracted to authenticity. If my students have a leader that's not authentic, they're just showing up to teach a lesson, they can sniff it out immediately. So training my leaders in the process of leadership of self. And I love how Dr. Ross, I don't know if you follow Dr. Richard Ross on Twitter, but he says some things sometimes, and he always says it like 4 o'clock in the morning because he's up then. But he says some things sometimes on Twitter, and I'm like, ouch, that hurt. And but he talks a lot about, man, if you want revival among your students, at what point have you planned revival among your own leaders? And he'll use stuff like that. How are you investing into your leaders that which you want them to invest into your students? Proven ongoing training and ownership. We have some stuff there. We meet the third Sunday of every month except for June and December. We've started something new called Take 5 Leader, which we do a 5-minute video. We send it out, just very specific, applicable training. We just started that last week, even though we've been talking about it for a year. That's one of those we're about to's, but actually just started. Weekly 5-minute training, celebrating, appreciating volunteers. This month in our leadership training, we're taking a break from training. And we're going to, I know it sounds really crazy, but our student ministry staff's going to put on a murder mystery. And we're going to act it out. We're going to feed them a meal. It's Thanksgiving. Hey, we appreciate you guys. At the end of the year in May, we do a rock star appreciation banquet where we make a big deal out of them. We print up a banner, take their picture as if they're walking down the red carpet. We have a red carpet. We We have paparazzi. Celebrating, appreciating your volunteers. Year end, here's a big one, and I think this is on the blog as well. I have at the end, my teachers fill out a self-development evaluation, and that it rates them in the areas of teaching, reaching, ministering, and relationships and their own personal leadership. Based on their scores, it offers suggestions for them. Okay, let's just throw it around for just a second. What's your system for developing leaders and giving them ownership in your ministry? What's your system for ongoing leadership? What's it look like for you, Jason?
Right now, it's kind of just meeting, occasionally. And this is, like you said, we're going through these ministry struggles. This is something that I'm wrestling with how to do this best.
Mm-hmm.
This is my biggest probably weakness area here. And so right now, it is getting together. And what I'm trying to do is the timing of it because of how busy people are. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to capture as much as possible.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're having to scream,
Do you, what's the percentage of volunteers that show up? Do you know? For those meetings. When do you meet, by the way?
Yeah. We usually meet on Sunday evenings because that's we don't have a
church
service.
Right.
The training. But, be working, we'll do these things. And so, I'll get, sometimes it can be half. Depending. And so what I'm going to try to do is occasionally mix that up here and do a short meeting right after church. Just 15, 20 minutes real quick just to, get a few down there. They can't make the other ones. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out time.
Yeah.
My problem is,
Yeah.
Everyone, I can't. And it's, okay, part of the requirement goes back to the covenant thing, how are we going to uphold these things, and here's the expectation.
Is part of your covenant that they must attend leadership meetings?
The covenant, as much as possible. See, what I need to go back and do is really get, about 80% or something, 70%.
Right.
I'm trying to work with their, some of my kids' schedule, and that's tough. I'm trying to do with the expectation they need to be there.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thought.
Once a month.
That's a good thought.
That's my biggest issue here.
I think it's okay in this process to say, in that covenant process at the very beginning, to say, you're expected to be at leadership meeting, whatever that is, every month. And just by the way, by example, I have leaders that I've asked to not teach anymore and leaders that I've taken out of a primary position into a secondary position because they didn't attend leadership meeting. It's that important to us. I tell my leaders and my boss tells us to tell our leaders that this is the most important thing we do every single month with them is our leadership meeting.
I'll say this is one of the big things with us. Of course, as you come in as a student ministry, you already have volunteers there. You have to kind of recruit or something. You kind of have to go back and say, here's what we're moving because they were maybe brought in under a different organization.
That's good.
And they're like, I didn't come in under that.
That's good. Yeah. Sometimes you have to go to them. And then sometimes you just pray them out.
I've been praying for 3 years.
Yeah. God knows. He's heard. Don't say any names. This is on the internet. So, yeah. Any other thoughts there? I really want to strongly encourage you guys to think through. And here's the most often asked question. It's in the area of how do we train leaders, but specifically, what do I teach them? I mean, that's the thing. What do I train them? And just a thought for you guys, ask your teachers. Let them fill out a survey and say, what is it that you need training on? What do you feel like you're lacking? And then not only that, but here's the thing for me. The thing that drives my training is my purposes for why I employ them. I employ them to teach, to reach, and to do relationships. So I train them to teach, to reach, and to do relationships. That's good.
So
wow.
This year, if you're on my youth council or you're in my leadership, we're reading Donnie Hunt's Building Your Leadership Resume. And we did a couple of times that. The year before that, we read Rethink by Steve Wright. We had required reading. Luckily, my church, you serve 3 years and then you rotate off. And so I'm stuck with you 3 years, and after 3 years, I don't have to invite you back. And
yeah.
So, that's one benefit from serving an elder. Wow.
That's good. Do you pay for those books or do they pay for them?
They do.
They do. Wow, that's awesome. I think that's a great suggestion, offering and suggesting books for them to read. We offer books in areas of those three and we'll give them to them. Although we rarely have people take us up on that. It sounds better than it actually works out. But
we give
That's good. That's a great thought. That's a great thought. One of the things that we are doing on our staff, we're starting actually this coming week, is that myself, every one of my interns, we meet, we will have a lunch a week with a volunteer. So I'll have one, my interns will have one, for the very purpose of say, I love you, I appreciate you, I'm praying for you, how can we help you? I think it's critical. You got to eat lunch every day, so why not try to spend at least one day a week with a volunteer? We talk about one talent, two talent, five talent teachers. At the end of the year, I have to rate all of my leaders based on that scale, one talent, two talent, five talent. And then the question becomes, I've got a five talent teacher, how do I keep them engaged? And part of me keeping a five talent teacher engaged is I employ them in the training process. I'll employ them in the recruiting process. Some of them, I'll move them beyond just, and I don't mean beyond the small group leader, into a larger role. Like I sat down with Blake Evans 5 years ago and said, I see God's gifted you incredibly. I want you to continue to teach for me, but I want you to be over my summer camp. I sat down with Jay Willis and said, I want you to be over my mission trip stuff. I sat down with Lori Connor and said, I want you to be over my SOU stuff. So putting the right people on the bus, but also on the right seat on the bus with your five talent teachers who are committed, man, you got to figure out something to keep them going, keep the momentum going. And for them, every now and then, a change of scenery is good. Any other thoughts on the ongoing process? By the way, there are some resources at the bottom, I think somewhere, on training. I'll offer some resources on the blog where you can, it's just a Word document. You can use it directly. If you feel like the Take Five Leader works for you, just send it out to your leaders and let them see it. You can do your own. I know there is some other training available out there in different spots, and I think there's some of that on the bottom of the page, okay? I'm not going to work through the bottom part of that page right there. And then just the summary thoughts on recruiting and training volunteers. I like this illustration, and I've seen it work out in our ministry personally. If you think about a triangle, all of you guys that are great in geometry, triangle has how many sides?
Three.
Awesome. You guys are brilliant. And so every triangle must have a base. And let's say this is my base. Let's use this as a visual illustration for my base of leaders. Let's say this base, this particular size of this base represents 10 leaders in my ministry. Well, we know from geometry that the size and the length of the base will determine the what? The height of the what? Sides? Is that right? Is that not right? That is right. Trust me. All right. So let's say we expand our leadership base. So I had 10 last year, and this is just a stretch, but let's say I moved to 20 leaders this year. I expanded my leadership base. When I expand, according to geometry, when I expand my base, it expands the height of my sides. Now, it's not always true, but a great church growth principle for you guys, a great principle for growing your ministry is expanding the leadership base at least gives you the potential to expand the size of your organization. Does that make sense? And it's also, it works the opposite. When you don't have enough leaders, it can work in the opposite way, all right? The second thought as we wrap it up here is any system you develop, and this is a great saying from my boss. He's from Tennessee, and he's got a lot of sayings like this. Any system you develop must be worked in order to work. I mean, if you got a strategy, you've got a system, you got to work it. And again, wrapping all the way up and going back to the beginning, if that system is not producing what it is that you hope to produce, then it probably gives us an idea that something needs to be tweaked, and we have to go back and look at that process and that system all over again. I'm constantly looking at this process. We have hundreds of volunteers that come through our ministry, from small groups to Wednesday night to summer camp to mission trip, and I'm always constantly thinking. In fact, I wrote some notes down on the plane yesterday about this new leader strategy for us. So constantly looking. Where to find other resources? I put some things down there for you guys. One of the best things that works for me is I have an iPad. I've got an app on my iPad that allows me to look at blogs in a magazine format, so it's a little easier to read. And I read guys' blogs every week, and a lot of it's on training stuff and resources. Youth pastors call all the time at my office, and I'll send them to Cindy and say, set up a 30-minute appointment. Any youth pastor that's worth his salt will give you time. And I would encourage you guys to pick up the phone and call some guys and ask what they're doing really, really well. You can blogs, websites, you guys know the routine there. And then there's some free downloadable resources here, that some websites that are listed for you guys. And there's one thing that I didn't put on there, I don't think. And I did this at Lifeway's conference last year. And I don't know if you guys know, I think his name is Doug. He's over Leader Treks. He was in my session. And they offer excellent resources for student leaders. And I forgot to put it on my blog. On this sheet, but it reminded me afterwards. LeaderTreks.org is a great resource for training leaders and student leaders as well. Any thoughts as we wrap up? Any questions? Yeah.
I have a question. What app do you use for that?
It's called
Flipboard.
Yep, Flipboard. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I'll probably follow 12 or 15 different blogs. And it just updates every time I open it up. The one, yeah, you know, and I think in the world that most of us live in, we have a tendency to say, I want to follow this type of person. But I try to read very widely because I think I can discern good from bad occasionally. So I'll read widely, but some of the guys that I do read, Brian Mills is one of my best friends in ministry. He has some great stuff, and he offers free stuff all the time. I love to read Josh Griffin. I love to read, let me see if I can pull it up here. I'll tell you who. Josh Griffin, also read studentministry.org. They've also got some stuff, and they update it every single week. Let me pull it up here. AverageYouthMinistry.com. More Than Dodgeball, which is Josh Griffin out at Saddleback. What is orange.org? Smallchurchyouthministry.com. I read that. Rethinkingyouthministry.com. This would probably come from a theological angle very different than my own, but I still do take some stuff from it. Rethinkingyouthministry.com. I don't know who the guy is there. But I know it comes from more of an emergent background, and obviously that's not where I am theologically, but I take the meat and spit out the bones or whatever that saying is. Studentpastorlife.wordpress.com. Juniorhighyouthministry.com. Just some of them. And then I have a leadership tab on here that I read as well, which I think is vital. And I read michaelhyatt.com, leadershipfreak.wordpress.com, or I think it's just leadershipfreak.com. Excellent stuff. I get an email every. This is one that I have come to my email as well as my Flipboard. Excellent stuff. Every single day he puts out great stuff. So, guy's a former pastor. He just writes on leadership stuff. I would encourage you guys to read some of that. Anyways, that's just some of them. I don't know what I did here. Any other thoughts before we wrap up? Thanks for coming. If I can be a resource in any way, please let me know. My information is on here, and I'd love to keep in touch with you guys, okay? Cool. All right. Thanks for coming, guys and ladies.